Job, do you like to play games?
Yeah. Peter says you have the best games.
Well, I have a game in my house that you might like to play. Would you like that?
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to this continuation of the Stephen King Night Shift retrospective series.
This will be the best ride of your life, Marty.
Join Garrett.
You did this!
Matt.
I am God here!
And Adam.
This is bullshit, a whole bunch of bullshit.
As they continue to dive into each movie adaptation from King's short story collection, Night Shift.
I am a man of my word.
Contained in this leg of the Stephen King retrospective are the adaptations of Graveyard Shift.
There ain't no way they're going to get this place settled in a week.
The three Mangler movies.
Like I told you, there's no free lunch, no siree, Bob.
And the two Lawnmower Man films.
This is all on you.
Keep checking in, as the boys will continue going through each cinematic adaptation of the popular author's work, one movie at a time, in publication order.
How can you do this to me?
All coming up, courtesy of Percolated Media.
I'm in!
Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War, / Beyond Cyberspace. Released January 12th, 1996. Budget on this was $15 million. Box office, $2.4 million. Ouch. This was directed by Farhad Mann. All right, boys. Well, last week's movie comes out, does gangbusters for that studio. Stephen King sues to have his name removed from it. And wouldn't you know, guess what? New Line Cinema wanted to franchise it.
It was the house that Freddy built, and Job was going to be the one who put up the finishing.
They had plans with this, boys. They had plans to do virtual reality-style rides at theme parks based on Lawnmower Man. And you can probably tell by the way this movie ends, they did have plans for a sequel. And as I told everybody at the beginning of this podcast, $2.4 million on a $15 million budget is going to sink your ship rather fast, faster than the next year's Titanic. Adam, how did you feel going into Lawnmower Man 2?
This is a film that I had never bothered to see, even though clearly I had an affinity for and still do for the Lawnmower Man. I remember seeing a trailer for this. I remember knowing about it and just going, no way. I was like Max Headroom back in the 90s. No, was not going to see this, was never going to see it until I decided to hook up with you two yokels and I was forced to get strapped in a chair and watch Lawnmower Man 2 into cyberspace / Job's War / good luck finding this anywhere to watch.
It's right there on Stars.
It's also on YouTube.
Funny it's on that service network. There's no Stars in this fucking movie.
Thank you, Creature Features, for your YouTube channel.
Matt, you ended last week's podcast not too positive on going into this one. How'd you feel when you sat down to finally watch this one?
Well, first of all, it took me 2 days to figure out a platform to watch this on until I looked at Stars and said, okay, I'll pay the $9.99 fee to watch this for a month. And I'm like, oh, just after my Planet of the Apes rewatches, and I bought it for that. It's expired, so I had to rebuy it. I could think of better ways to spend $10, but look, I knew nothing about this movie. All I knew was the title. I knew nothing about the plot. I didn't know who was in this. I didn't know this was the Max Headroom director and star re-teaming and all that, and I still couldn't give a shit.
Yep, and of course, by 1996, Pierce Brosnan's knee-deep in Bond. He could give two shits. I'm sure they called, and he laughed in their face.
They said they were the producers of Remington Steele.
Yeah. My big question, though, is what the hell was Jeff Fahey doing where he didn't have to do this in 1996? Because, like you said, Farhad Mann, he does a script to this, and I don't know if they called him or not. I didn't see anything in my research that said they did. But he ended up calling up his Max Headroom buddy, Matt Frewer, to come and play the Job role. And boy, we'll talk about how that it integrates itself in. But yeah, I didn't have too many positive thoughts either going into this. We ended last week's podcast surprisingly positive on what we just seen, even though none of us agreed it was a good movie. We all thought that, you know, it was just fun to laugh about that movie for an hour, 40 minutes or so. Here, I was dreading what I was going to watch. I'll go ahead and say that right now.
Well, Brett Leonard chose to do Virtuosity instead, which is basically as bad as The Lawnmower Man.
Oh, me and Adam love that movie. Me and Adam saw that in theaters. We saw it with the ladies we were with at the time. And boy, Adam, I think we could all say that we had a good time with that one.
Well, that movie did for Russell Crowe what Batman Forever did for Tommy Lee Jones, where he gave a batshit performance and he will never do something like that ever again.
Sometimes I kind of wish he would, though. He kind of takes himself a little too serious. But
yeah, that's true. But we have the nice guys.
You can die on that hill, sir. This movie opens up. We see the end of the last movie with Job trying to get out of the mainframe and getting denied until it's finally granted. Okay, so before I get to the next set of film here, why do we see a flashback to the last movie when we're not even, like, none of this really comes into play when we get to the movie started? No.
And they have to do their damnest to cut around showing Jeff Fahey and Pierce Brosnan. Yes. Because they're not this one. So you got a lot of back shots and other things. It's bad. And that's the problem when you make sequels without your original stars. The only one around this time that got away with it was RoboCop 3, because you only see the bottom of his mouth.
Oh, boy. We'll go back to RoboCop as we get into the film. I definitely got vibes from that, and there's a reason for that.
One, I was like, okay, we are going to take up right where the other one left off, because that's what we're doing here. Like, this is the end of that first movie. So, and it tells me in the title, Lawnmower Man 2, this is a sequel. Guess what? That's where anything having to do with that first film, other than the name, ends. And that blows me away more than the bomb going off in that frickin' building that somehow also gets rebuilt. Like, if Stephen King sued to have the first one, he should sue just for using the name Lawnmower Man. I don't care that his name is not on this. He should sue out of principle for them calling this the Lawnmower Man.
Well, they should call this Lawnmower Man 2, the second cut.
Yes. The reason they should do that is because the movie was pretty much taken out of the director's hand in the editing room. People in the studio...
I guess, because if he stayed on, it would have been a great movie.
Well, he was wanting to make a completely different movie than what everybody else wanted, and that's kind of what I was hoping for. Like, but when that movie ended last week, and we see the phones ring and everything else, we know Job's still out there, I'm thinking we're going to see this character like we did at the end of the last movie, doing fun slasher kills. We don't get that here. And I think the director of this didn't want to go in that direction, and everything just kind of got taken from him. And once again, it feels like last week's jumble mess, where we have two different scripts, none of it melds. One of the guys who's on here, and the reason why I laughed when you mentioned RoboCop 3, is because one of the writers of this was a writer on RoboCop 2. And Matt, was it just me, or did you get major RoboCop 3 vibes from this?
Yeah, 3 more so than 2, because this one doesn't have the hard edge.
Yeah.
Like, this one feels really kiddified, which is weird. And by the way, this movie dates even worse than the first one does.
Big time. Yeah.
Which is shocking. Normally, you think with a sequel, the technology would at least be a little bit more comparable. But between that and this is 90s fashion, and it's worse.
Big time.
Especially when you see Peter come back. It's like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Everything in this film, outside of the first, like, 60 seconds, I'm like, did I just step back into the Mangler 2?
Yeah, same kind of vibes, huh? But at least Mangler 2 had man Turner shit on wires, and we got a few kills in that. Here, yeah, we're not seeing any of that. But we are getting a black and white flashback as we hear about a Dr. Trace who's trying his damnedest to get the patent of what's called the Chiron chip back in his possession, but is firmly denied. Oh, the Chiron chip. We see the shop being explored until they find a quote unquote live one, and we see Job airlifted to another hospital, and we learn that they have reconstructed his face. So this is how they explain that this isn't Jeff Fahey.
This is their way to explain the recast, which it's about as tactical as you can do. That's the only logic you have.
For sure.
If you're going to call attention to it at all, I mean, you could have just, it would have been even funnier if they didn't do that and just said, this is Job.
They have no way to explain why that skin suit that was left over when he was sucked out of it suddenly doesn't exist, and it's just a guy without legs.
Yeah, yeah, we learn that he doesn't have legs either. So Job keeps responding to questions with, "Peter, Peter, pumpkin eater," until the nurses learn that his name is Job. And I love how there's this huge distortion in the background as he's answering these questions. One of the nurses asks him to tell him about himself, and he just responds with the fact that there's so much empty space, like it's been erased.
Yeah, I think the screenwriter said the same thing when they submitted their page. The writers, the head at New Line looked at it and said, "This is 10 pages. Where's all the plot?" They're like, "Oh, we'll think of it eventually."
We'll think of it eventually. Yeah, I don't remember anything about Peter Pumpkin Eater in the last film. We're seeing the only bit of Job that from last week where we're seeing him with his lawnmower and Peter showing him the new Cosmic Man comic book. We then meet Jonathan Walker. No, not Johnny Walker. The stuff I wish I was drinking while I was watching this, but this head of this.
Well, it depends. This movie's on the same level as the Red Label, where it's just disgusting garbage.
This Jonathan Walker, he runs this facility as well as owns the patent to the Chiron chip. He asked Job to build the chip for him. Because, yeah, we had the internet at this point, but this movie proves that nobody knew how it worked.
Oh, God. Like, this is part of a trilogy of 90s movies that did not understand the internet. This, Hackers, and, actually, there's a third one. Oh, The Net.
The Net, yeah. Another one me and Adam saw in theaters.
Oh, The Net.
Job gets a bad feeling about this, and he tries wiggling out of his constraints. They put him back in the gyrosphere, and that was probably my favorite part of this movie, was seeing them put this invalid without legs in this gyrosphere.
He looks like Robo. He looks like Murphy after he gets shot up, like he's just a torso. Uh-huh.
Exactly, yeah. Again, Robocop for sure. And the gyrosphere, everything's exploding around him. Yeah, this was a good idea. We hear access granted, and this is when Job looks right at the camera and the film fades to black.
End credits.
I love how both of you said that at the same time.
The amazing part, I'm watching the beginning of this film, right? And it's being shown to me on my TV in a 4:3 format. It's square. And I'm thinking, did they in the 90s put this out only in a freaking 4:3 direct-to-video movie? No, this is just the way the pre-credit sequence is being done to catch you up.
Yes.
Jesus.
It should be said, this is not a direct-to-video release. Like I mentioned in the beginning, this was a budgeted film. It was released to over 1,000 theaters, boys.
Blew me away. In the 90s, which
yeah.
It was only 2,000 total. And it stayed there about as long as Madam Web. 1 week.
We cut to Los Angeles in the future. Actually takes place 6 years in the future. We get this director's version of Blade Runner, I guess, and Back to the Future Part 2, this huge knockoff set.
Oh, no. You know what I got here in this version of the future? And you'll appreciate this. Strange Days.
Oh, jeez. I guess you can see that for sure. Nice.
It's a freaking $10 million Strange Days.
That's where the rest of the budget went.
Yeah. As we see Peter Pumpkin Eater on his roller skates, and I have to say, seeing Austin O'Brien in this so close to when we watched the first Lawnmower Man reminded me of Matt when I watched Boyhood in its entirety. Like, not that O'Brien could ever act, but he could get away with his shortcomings because he was young and he was bright-eyed. Here, he's a teenager with a deep voice and a very, very poor delivery.
Well, once he hit puberty, any semblance of ability he had went out of his brain. You know, sometimes a lot of these kid actors just don't make the transition, and this is no exception. Not that he was ever a good actor to begin with, but unlike Boyhood, there's no Ethan Hawke or Patricia Arquette to offset how bad it is.
He had Arnold.
Well, look, when Arnold Schwarzenegger is the best actor in your duo, you're having problems.
They're getting phone access codes with his new running mate, Jade.
Oh my God, this is like, what do we do? Oh, we're just going to make him a hacker. What does that mean? Fuck it, we're not going to explain it.
We're not here to explain it, exactly. They go underground and run into Travis, who is apparently Jade's brother. And then we meet Sean as Peter puts in the access code and is granted trapdoor access to cyberspace. I think I like last week's goggles a little bit more than what we see here. This is really sad.
These look like the freaking night vision goggles from Jurassic Park.
Yes. And what's weird here, boys, is we've gone from last week's crazy little bit of a slasher film towards the end and a cyber thriller into what I just look at as just a knockoff of Goonies. I thought Goonies while I was watching this.
Saying scratch that off my notes because Goonies is exactly what I had written down here. Yes.
I was going to say, this felt like something Shane Black wiped his ass with and threw in the garbage. Because I was thinking, like, someone tried to make the Monster Squad, but with science fiction.
They head into a Sega CD-style world as it's like they're floating. And I tell you, I like this stuff better when it was Atreyu flying with Falcor. And
I was going to say, someone yell, do a barrel roll, please.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, it looked more real in the Neverending Story from 1984. That was 12 years before this. This is just bad. These are bad effects. And Matt, you hit it right on the head in the beginning here. It's in my notes as well. God, they don't age well.
No, they've regressed rather than upgraded.
Yeah.
This is the type of shit that you would get in a mall or when you went to a theme park.
Yes.
And they would have you lay in front of a green screen and give you a load of video of yourself flying. Like, that is the extent of the effects in this and the extent of the quality as well.
Well, you also have to think, too, again, they were thinking of franchising this. Like, I think that theme park feel is exactly what they're trying for. Look, when you have the horror type elements of last week and you're trying to make it into this, God damn, it just doesn't come across as good in any event. Plus, we have the score here, and the score is very odd. It's very mid-90s fantasy. It's like they did not know who they were making this movie for. If it was for people who paid to see the first film, which made $150 million, they have completely failed. Like, we have a weird score in the course of this film, and this guy's a world-renowned composer, but man, this movie just, it's just not the right feel for this.
Is he well-renowned in his city block?
All right. Well, there are a lot of moments in this film that I want to point out that, like, just blew me away. But this dog putting in this disc may be my favorite.
Oh, wow.
It's not with his mouth or anything. No, he does it with his paw.
Yeah, that was a very possum moment. I want to tell this movie to roll over and play dead now.
So the Autobots roll out as soon as the disc goes in.
That's the one franchise I would not want to be watching over this.
One runs right into a branch, and we see Job enter with his lawnmower. This movie is already way off the rails, boys, and we're not 10 minutes in.
It's a different movie. It is just completely different. It every aspect of this. That it's going to be a kid movie. That they're disregarding everything that came before. That Job is somehow back in a body, like, it. You got to decide that it's a different movie. That doesn't mean it's good, but you just got to go, okay, it's a different take.
I have a theory. This New Line subscribed to the Dimension Hellraiser model of, we're just going to take a spec script, put Hellraiser shit in it, and make it a Hellraiser movie. I feel like this was an alternative script, kind of like Cyber God was, but they said, no, it's going to be a Lawnmower Man sequel. Tie it in somehow. Don't ask me how.
Yeah, because I could see them making this standing alone on its own as a 90s kid computer type of movie. Like, that makes sense. So, yeah, I could completely see them just cheapening out by grabbing a spec script and throwing Job into this to make it a Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this when we talk about Children of the Corn. We talked about this throughout the course of a majority of these Night Shift films. Those Mangler movies, like, they all seem like different scripts and just kind of plastered with a Stephen King property on it. Didn't work in this regard. So we see a long-haired Austin O'Brien as he recognizes Job without his Fahey mask, and Job tells him that he's trapped in the cyberscape, and he needs his help to get out or else he's going to die. He then asks Peter to get Benjamin Trace so that he can help him out. He says he needs to find him as Trace is in seclusion.
Because he saw the script of this film and decided he didn't want to be part of it.
I'm sure they offered Brosnan a lot of money, and he said, the world is not enough as far as what you can pay me to come back to this bullshit.
There's talks of him coming back, but we'll talk about that. So as Peter's getting this scoop, he's pulled out of the cyberscape, and they see that Peter can't breathe. So apparently the cyberscape is bad for your health.
Yeah, this movie is now starting to subscribe to the brain scan with Edward Furlong.
Oh, God. Oh, and another bad movie from this era.
I love that movie, though, because it's so bad.
We see the arrival of Senator Greenspan, who meets Corey Platt and Jennifer as he gets a tour of Virtual Light. This Jennifer chick, I thought she was a robot the entire movie. this blonde bob cut broad.
I forgot to change her batteries because she can only do one, like,
yeah,
one type of line read.
We're hearing the goal here is to make all previous virtual reality systems obsolete.
Oh, the Elon Musk is sponsoring. Yeah.
We see the Chiron chip. Anyone else getting Transformers flashbacks here? You know, the cube.
But I'm going to plug it into my starship to find a way to go to Exegol and find Palpatine.
We see a demonstration of how the Chiron chip will open up the pathway to virtual reality so that it will be accessed by everyone. That would be a bad thing? Well, I guess we've seen that it is.
This is the amazing part is, okay, the bad guys in this movie are going to get those evil damn liberals, which is funny when they keep yelling about Greenspan. And if anybody knows who Alan Greenspan was, it's amazing how, like, the shot at that. Mm-hmm. But the, whatever you call them, not the syndicate, but whatever this group is supposed to
be. The shop.
That it's all about, oh, we're going to get the liberals by getting and accessing everybody's data and all this information. We're going to get it. This dude is Google. Like, he is every liberal media fucking owner that exists, but they flip it because it's the 90s and Republicans are always the evil part when it comes to this. But I'm like, you realize this is Google, is everything that they are doing here in this film.
The senator warns Jonathan that doing this would put a lot of power in his lap, to which Jonathan responds, "My lap is your lap."
Oh, boy.
We see Job doing a motion that I used to do a lot when I had the internet, except he's not actually doing that act. He's just pounding the keyboard and doing this paddle board, too, this paddle ball, which was funny. Come on, guys. Making knuckle children. Come on, you know what I'm talking about here.
Oh, on again.
What happens in the 90s stays in the 90s.
We see Job completing the Chiron chip and designing the virtual city. And then Job tells Corey people see of him what he wants them to see, and Corey wishes him a good night. All right, Matt Frewer. Adam, last week you said that you were just not a fan of Max Headroom. I remember loving it when I was a kid. And, of course, we have the director of the pilot here. He's reunited with Matt Frewer for this. How'd you feel Matt Frewer was in this? Adam, did this win you over at all?
I don't feel that he's bad. Like, I don't think he's good, but I just don't think there's anything good that he could do with it. But I was expecting to be really put off by him, and I think he's remarkably restrained. And I can't believe I'm saying that for this film. But I don't think Matt Frewer is a problem in this, and I'm amazingly surprised those words are coming out of my mouth.
Boy, I'm shocked to hear you say that.
I kind of wish he modulated his performance a bit more, because I kind of wanted him to be more off the rails and more of an ego trip type character. Because as he is, I think the most damning thing I could say is I didn't hate him, which is the biggest backhanded compliment I could probably give.
That is very backhanded. We're going to eventually get to a movie that I was not allowed to cover the first time we did the X-Men franchise, Generation X, which came out this exact same year, by the way. And we're going to talk about him when we get to The Stand eventually next year.
Yeah, well, We talked about him in Supergirl.
I don't have any real big problems with Matt Frewer. In this movie, though, Matt, did you get Riddler vibes from Batman Forever?
No.
Really?
I would have vastly preferred that.
I do get the Jim Carrey thing. Like, I get what you're seeing there.
Yeah, and much like Pierce Brosnan, Jim's no way they could have gotten Jim Carrey to be in this. By this time, he's the biggest star in the world.
I love how Peter's being told, there's no way you can find him. He's really in seclusion. All Peter does is pretty much Google this Benjamin Trace, and he goes to this abandoned, incomplete house. As Peter is told, the Benjamin Trace is looking for is resting in peace. But the internet said he was here, so he must be lying, because the internet never lies, right, guys? Trace hears Peter talking to himself about Job and the Chiron chip, and he invites him inside. So this guy, and Adam, you remember, Patrick Bergen, the only thing I really remember him from was Sleeping with the Enemy with Julia Roberts. I saw that in theaters, and he was so bad and over the top in that. Here, he's pretty bad, too. I can see why he didn't rise above those ranks.
It's exactly what I remember him from, Sleeping with the Enemy, but it took me a while because I was staying away from IMDb. I don't like to look at it till I'm done with the movie. You know who I thought this was for the next 30 minutes? I thought this was Anthony LaPaglia.
Oh, jeez.
You know the guy who's the owner of the shop in Empire Records?
Yep.
That's who I thought this was. Because I swear they got the same face, same mannerism, and I just, yeah, but Bergen, I kind of feel bad because I think he did nothing but, like, single episode guest spots the rest of his career after this.
Pretty much, yeah.
Did you notice the Batman connection in this, Adam? Matt Frewer voiced the guy who supposedly killed Batman in
Not Almost Got Him, but
The Man Who Killed Batman.
The Man Who Killed Batman, yeah, then, that's right.
The homeless kid in this is the kid who voiced Tim Drake in The New Adventures.
Oh, wow.
Molly Shannon has a credit in this.
Yes, she has a credit here, too. You know what's interesting about this character is, guys, next year, we'll be talking about Firestarter. In the course of that movie, they dress Dorsey Scott up to look Indian, and I'm not lying. He's supposed to be playing an Indian in that movie.
Yeah.
Are they trying to do the same thing with Patrick Bergen here? I kind of got that vibe.
No, but I feel like they had to coif his hair to kind of resemble Pierce Brosnan, and I didn't see the earring. I don't think I caught that. Yeah, that's the only thing I know this guy from, besides Sleeping with the Enemy. This is going to be a very, very obscure reference that I don't know if anyone else will catch on these airwaves. I remember an episode of Smallville.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was in that. Yeah.
I think it was like season 4 or 5, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like DC connections in this. So I'm starting to think that this is a prequel to... this company might as well be LexCorp. Dean Norris was Lex Luthor.
Trey says that everything he's looking for is here. The earth, the water, and answers. Peter tells Trace that Job is stuck in virtual reality, and this is when we learn that Peter's mom is dead. So we've gone this far to find out that Peter's mom is dead.
Yeah, the movie stops for them to say that line. You might as well have had Robin Williams come up and go, "She's dead, Chief."
Trace turns down helping him, so Peter gives him a disc and walks away. He's seeing everything he saw previously in fast motion. What a fun-looking game this is. I love how it has the exact same camera angles as we saw in the beginning of the film. Everything's the exact same as was shot by the people making the movie. We go back to the rainy streets of LA as Trace enters Peter's domain and Peter calls back his troops. Peter compliments their ventilation system and they called him the Einstein of VR, guys. Einstein of VR. Trace makes sure to ask Peter if he can trust that Job needs help, and Peter gives the backstory of what we saw in the previous film. I love how Peter's like selling him off. Like, he's just like, well, yeah, he was not very smart until our neighbor got a hold of him, that bastard, and now he's like this overraged killer, but guess what? He's not that exact same character, and plus, it's not the exact same actor, and I love how Peter is buying into it right away.
Crazy that who doesn't know what, and you think they should know based on who's building the Chiron chip and who's worked with Job and everything else. So it doesn't go together in any way.
Yeah, this plot makes, I can't believe I'm saying this about the Lawnmower Man too, but this plot makes no sense. and I hate how duped these characters are, especially when they find out the chip is a decoy.
Oh my God, yeah, we're getting there. Now, Adam, did you get 90s Tron vibes here? I mean, they're trying to make a sequel to Tron. We kind of saw the Tron suits last film. Here we're going into this world, and to me it kind of felt like that. You?
I think they're trying to do it without the time, effort, or money to do it, you know, any sort of justice. But yeah, I think they're trying to capitalize on that. But this is just, it's like VR was such a new thing, and I get wanting to make a movie out of it. I mean, not to hit some of my summation, but trying to make this Lawnmower Man is one of the things that's damning this movie the most. Yeah. You know, you make its own little, hey, Goonies on a Blade Runner adventure of trying to get into the internet, you got a movie. But because of the limitations of what they're shoehorning this into, it just dumbs it down, and it's already dumb.
Trey says he's scared to go into VR as we see more Sewer Shark type scenes. Adam, remember the game Sewer Shark for the Sega CD?
Yes.
As Peter's entering this domain, he runs into Job again and he says that while he didn't bring the good doctor, the doctor is watching and won't jack in. To which Job says, jacking in, jacking off, what's the difference?
When it comes to VR, that's a big difference.
Which then I was waiting for a free jack joke to drop around the same time. Remember that one?
Free Jack. I mean, holy shit.
I mean, it was the 90s. I was waiting for New Jack to show up.
Oh, nice. The big problem with this Matt Frewer performance is, new face or not, I'm not seeing any of last week's character in what Frewer is doing here. It's like he took the gig without watching a minute of last week's film and said, I want to do it my way, and that's it. Like, I'm not seeing Job here. We're seeing Matt Frewer.
Yeah, there's no character. Like, there's no character. And if they didn't call him Job, you would think this is a totally different character.
Exactly.
the crazy thing is then when you do watch the trailer for this, it's obvious they wanted you to make, or sorry, they wanted to make you think of Max Headroom, but he's not playing that in this at all. Mm-hmm. Like, he is not going down that realm other than a head on a TV, but the imagery is obviously intended to make you remember that.
He says that they're both unwanted and ahead of their time, and he says that he has found the secret to immortality in the Chiron chip. He shows Trace the Chiron chip, and Trace says that he's not going to help him. Job says that in 3 days, he'll be in every system in the world, and Peter says he doesn't know what's wrong. He's never seen Job like this before. Bullshit! You just saw it last week!
Yeah, did you not watch the last movie?
What is wrong with the writing here? The freaking... It is so bad. There's no continuity whatsoever.
I'm telling you, my theory is this was a different script that they just turned into a Marvel Man sequel.
And Adam, I thought of you a lot while watching this because you're the one who works down in these train systems. And what were you thinking when you were seeing these kids living down here? And we have a runaway train we'll be talking about here in a bit.
Stay away from the third rails, kids. We had somebody electrocuted just last week. Do not touch those third rails.
We're seeing Job control the train and makes it head to where everybody is. As he says, the game is afoot. And I hate movies where we are seeing the mashing of keyboards as a sort of action scene. We get a lot of that here, too.
We do, in a way that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, look at the end of the day, what this is about is connecting information into a central hub.
Yes.
So it's amazing how 30 years removed, almost, that's not a plot. That's a side note on a news story in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new server that Google turns online. Like, that's just not compelling anymore.
The train crashes into a spot not far from their headquarters, so they run through the tunnels and almost forget about the dog. I was scared for that dog.
More than anybody else in this film.
Yeah. Me and Adam said the exact same thing. Sean grabs Harvey as more explosions happen and they make their way up. Trace takes a massive hit, but he seems to be okay. We cut to Jonathan asking to see every Democrat who makes over $300,000 a year.
That's just Congress in general.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Hey, Google. Hey, Siri.
Right. Trey says that if Job is worried about Egypt, he's about to use the chip to its fullest potential. Every time they said Egypt, I'm thinking, okay, so we're going to see like them actually go to Egypt. No, we're just talking about a portion of this chip.
I figured there has to be some correlation. It's either something about Ramses, or because it's shaped like that pyramid fucking Sith Wayfinder shit, that it's Egypt because it's a pyramid look for that Chiron chip, which if you've got a chip that's freaking stands 6 inches tall and 4 inches wide, that's the biggest chip in history for a single chip. They obviously don't know what freaking a computer chip looks like. That Egypt is just a word they pulled out of their ass to...
Yeah.
It's like a placeholder on a script, and nobody remembered to replace it.
We see Peter put his hand on Jade's shoulder as more data is accessed. They pull up Corey Platt's profile, and all the dudes just seem amazed. Jonathan tells Job that they cannot lose their license to go online. Boy, imagine how big a pain in the ass that is, huh? Like, you gotta have a license to go online. We see Job cause a plane crash with a plane that contains the senator who was opposed to the launch of the Chiron chip and the world that Job created. So it doesn't take Job long at all to kind of just go crazy and cause all these crashes.
And then by the end of this film, like, is Job malevolent? Is he not? Is he... Job goes through more freaking paces than almost anybody in this film.
We then see another doctor jack in, I guess, and access Job's confidential files. He's interrupted by Job, who comes in and says that the doctor is being a little too nosy before taking him out with the Force lightning as he smiles. See, this is how I expected Fahey to play this last week. But coming from Frewer, it's just all the more lesser than the sum of what we saw built last week. Like, this is the kind of stuff where if Jeff Fahey had gone full-on just crazy and given one-liners and such, like, that could have been a more fun movie to watch last week. Here, seeing Matt Frewer do it, I'm thinking, oh, God, like, why didn't Fahey do this last week?
There also isn't a lot of this in this film.
No.
And this doctor, I kept going, wait, did I walk out of the room earlier and miss an introduction of this guy? Nope.
No.
This doctor just shows up to jack in and get killed.
And we I don't know if we mentioned this already, but this is PG-13. This is an R from last week. So we're obviously going for a younger crowd here. So we're not going to kill them with a lawnmower or take their skin off or anything. We're just going to do these kiddified kills.
We're going to free jack kill them.
We're going to free jack kill them.
We're going to free jack kill him. We're going to strange days kill him, where it's just you got a connection to the brain, and yep, we're going to fry it.
Trace runs into Corey, and we notice that there's some kind of history between them. Trace tries warning Corey about Job, but she storms off. Trace says that she looks more beautiful than he remembered, and we learn that Trace ditched the project they were working on, which is why he lost the patent on the chip. So we get the backstory here. But Matt, you're absolutely right. This connection here is the fact that this does not connect with anything from last week's movie. Like, there was no Chiron chip mentioned last week. So this goes to your theory. This was a different script.
Yes, exactly.
We learn that the tracker is working as Trace and Peter head to try and break in and get the chip. Jennifer, this chick with the bob cut I mentioned earlier, and Corey, they have a spat as Jennifer tells her to do her job, and she will do hers. As Corey asks, what exactly is it that you do? Jennifer says that Job is going online tomorrow as Corey runs down Walker, who tells her that Job is an important part of the project and that Job is at a distinct disadvantage. We also learn that it was Jonathan who held back in giving Job his legs back out of fear that he was going to walk away.
Ah!
Exactly.
Like you walk away from the project.
Yeah. Oh my god, I cannot believe some of these plot points I'm reading. We see Corey access Hal or Mother or whatever computer they claim to not rip off in this movie. The computer tells her that Job's contents were erased by the authorization of Jonathan Walker. Corey then goes into his office and grabs the authorization before running into a Death Star guard and telling him that she was just grabbing a few files before heading out. As she's driving, she hits Travis, who's none too pleased, and man, is this chick having a bad fucking day. Trace is inside her car, bragging about the fact that he was right about how they were expanding Job's memory base. And then Jonathan calls her car phone, boys remember car phones, and tells her that she needs her rest as they have a big day tomorrow.
How far removed is Trace supposed to be from this project that he's gone native, literally, out in the fucking desert, but yet he's like knows Job, and that's been, goddamn.
Well, I mean, it's quite obvious that this Trace guy is supposed to be Brosnan in a different light, but I mean, even that, Adam, you and I, we talked about the fact that, me and Matt talked about the fact that Brosnan did not even give a good performance last week, but at least he had presence. Like, this character, this Trace guy, I feel nothing.
Trace is horrible. The guy playing him, the discount, like, the not even Dina Meyer character actress they get to play her, like, nobody is good in this. Like, Walker is probably the most compelling character in this other than Job, and that is sad.
Wow, that is sad. Corey kicks Trace out of the car as Trace says that he thought Corey was better than this. We cut to Trace and Peter. They're breaking into the facility with Jade's help, avoiding spotlights and the like, and boy, Mission Impossible this isn't, is it, Matt?
No, it's Mission Impossible to give this a ringing endorsement.
Wait until I talk about this scene. So they find the Chiron crystal. As Trace explains, the laser around us is a special laser alarm. Corey makes her way in the other way into the other side as Trace and Peter stand around the crystal like it's the golden idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And they even pull that trick as Trace tells Peter that he doesn't trust anyone to do it except for him. As he reaches and stops the laser, and Trace grabs it before placing the laser down. Like, they're treating this like they're even shooting around it like that. Like, we have the hands reaching out and making sure that, you know, that's steady. Of course, the feeling of accomplishment is immediately taken away as the alarm sounds and they're being chased by laser controlled by a laughing Job. Jennifer tries stopping Corey from opening the door as Trace gets out just in time to rescue her and take out the guard and Jennifer.
As they're running and everything that's happening in this complex, this building, I feel like they're in the queue line of an amusement park. Like, yeah. This is like when you're going into the Transformers ride at Universal. That's the level of these hallways and computer terminals and banks. Like, I would not be surprised if they filmed this at a theme park.
For sure. I got the feeling of, like, did you guys ever go on that Terminator ride?
Yeah,
it kind of felt like that. Oh, a friend of mine worked on that ride. We'll get to that story if we ever cover that series. So they're getting shot at until guards stand and Trace tells them to put down their guns if they want the chip. A fight breaks out and Peter is taken away as Trace is thrown into a wall. Corey takes Peter away as Trace takes out the guard with a monitor, which I thought was funny. They go down a slide that takes them to where the garbage is picked up. Boy, where have we heard that before?
Oh, yeah, it turns into Silent Night, Deadly Night 2 with Garbage Day.
Well, I thought of Star Wars when they go down the garbage chute, and they end up where the monster is.
That's where this movie belongs.
Of course, we don't get a monster here, and boy, I sure could have used one. And from here on out, we do get a few more Star Wars references, too, which I'll point out. Corey asks Trace why she left him back in her life, and he responds, because he's irresistible. Meanwhile, a guard is ordered by Job to take him some dirt that they found. I love this scene so much. It is so fucking weird. Job says, you know, take me some dirt. And he just looks around and goes, grab that dirt, you idiot.
This is also the dumb thing I hate in movies where, like, ancient relics or buildings hold the key to futuristic technology.
Yep.
Like, the Alex Perez movie Knowing did that.
Which I think is an underrated film, actually. I haven't seen it in years. I remember kind of liking it. Haven't seen it in a long time. Corey and Trace, they flirt and apologize to each other while she stops his bleeding, and Peter's friends and the dog look on. They examine the chip where Job supposedly merged the nano hardware, but we find out that there is no transmatrix. This is because it's a fake and is actually in the hands of Jonathan. Boy, what a reveal this was.
Most unobvious swerve.
You had a duplicate chip put in there so that it could be taken by these two, and assuming they're going to escape the lasers, you pull out the duplicate, the real one, and say, yeah, this is where the real one was the entire time.
When and where did you build an identical chip?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Why did you use the ice cube?
Exactly.
Put the other one in its place.
All of this is happening, of course, with Job looking on via monitor and Jennifer calling him a genius. The president then joins them, and Jonathan tells him that people will be jacking in from all over the country. They all will put on their headsets, and we're seeing the VR program at work.
That's the one thing that's true. We've all learned to jack in from wherever we are.
We sure have. Doing it right now. Jonathan then gives his presentation as Frewer holds up the chip and says the future is now. The energy consumes him, and we're seeing the global interface.
Then he says, it's just Facebook.
Jennifer whispers something, and then they head off as Job once again watches on. Corey says that Job is bad for business, meaning good businessman Jonathan will be the one who stops him. They call Jonathan and tell him that if he doesn't take Job offline, he won't have any options, and Job is a threat to his livelihood. Of course, Jonathan is concentrated on getting laid, and we see Job say that they can check in, but they can't check out. Gee, Matt, where have we heard that one before? We're pulling from all of those.
It was a bitch at the end of that.
Pulling all the franchises out here. We see a helicopter that Job has sent to crash head to their base, and they run from it in a not too bad explosion. I'll give them credit for this. This was a pretty good explosion.
Nice little model.
And then we see the Superman 3 thing of making many systems like stoplights and ATMs malfunction throughout the course of the world.
Oh, this movie could have used Richard Pryor.
Ooh. And that's saying something, considering you hated Richard Pryor in that film. Trace and company, they come to the conclusion that they need Egypt and stop Job from using the chip to take control of the world. Riots break out as Job tells everyone to jack into the New World Order. And he almost sounds like Brad Dourif here as he says it, too.
Did you notice what he tells them to put on, or I don't know if we're there yet, what he tells the people to put on their face, what he calls them?
Yeah.
He actually says, put on your iPhones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did catch that.
I, like, stopped in my tracks.
Yeah, and they mean it with they're, the EYE.
Yeah, they're VR goggles, but uh-huh. They're iPhones, and I'm just like, holy shit.
Yeah, I was taken aback by that, too. We see Job once again playing paddleball and Cerebro as Jonathan comes in. He tries giving Job orders, but Job says that he can't give him orders as he has no power over him. Job hears a conversation where they weigh the option of taking him out. Job turns on the alarms as Jonathan calls a code red and orders his men to shoot to kill the three terrorists on the premises. We see the Riddler, Job, he pleads his case as Trace and company realize that Trace needs to face his fear and jack into the VR. The kids say that they're going to go on a little bike ride to destroy the chip, which will anger Job to the point that he will destroy himself. We follow the bikes through the city and tunnels as some are taken out. They head up some platform elevators while the Riddler is giving his demonstration, and Trace approaches him. And then we get a lightsaber battle, I guess. This whole thing.
Yeah, it's like virtual lightsabers.
Yeah.
These look like the ones from Spaceballs.
Pulls out a sword and says, in here, he's the savior, but it's obvious that they can't save this conflict using the Force, so we get a sword fight between the two. And some real funny coordination is happening as Job tells Trace, I will crush you. And we finally get a reference to the fact that Job is the lawnmower man, which, my God, that took you long enough. Could they at least have gotten a goddamn coordinator here? A stunt coordinator? Because it's obvious the director just said, okay, just try to hit him.
They couldn't have afforded one.
Yeah. More funny back and forth happens between the two as they destroy the chip, but Job says that he doesn't need the chip as he's become the chip. He lifts Trace up in a green bolt of energy as Job's power is running out due to Egypt. He and the entire online interforce explodes as Job flashes back to Peter giving him a cake and telling him to make a wish. They get away Peter Pan style as everything explodes around them. What did you guys think about this conclusion here?
This is the most abrupt, hey, we needed to come up with an ending and we're out of money. Okay.
Hey, yeah.
So that's it. We're done. Hey guys, we need to finish tomorrow. wrap it up.
Sorry, when I say I'm done at 5 o'clock, I mean 5 o'clock.
Trace calls Peter his pal, as Peter says that he needs to see Job. Of course, it's the second time he's tried destroying him, but I need to see him. They walk in, and Peter is taken hostage by Jonathan. I thought this guy was dead, guys. Dun, dun, dun. Swerve here. Jonathan says that he wants a chip. Corey gives it to him as Jonathan fires at Corey. Job reaches for Jonathan's leg, and Jonathan is consumed by the energy and finally dies. Peter tells Job that he thought he lost him. As Trace and Corey, they make googly eyes at one another, and Peter says to Job, let's go home. We get a shot of the entire gang on the balcony of a building at sunset as credits roll and the most smolty music we have covered since we did the Shining miniseries plays in the background. All right. That is one of the craziest plot summaries I've ever read on this show. Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Lawnmower Man 2, Beyond Cyberspace? Adam, you go ahead and go, sir.
After the amazing discussion for the film that we watched last week, I was not exactly looking forward to Lawnmower 2, Job's War / Beyond Cyberspace. And after watching this movie, I still don't know what movie I watched and what it has to do with that first Lawnmower Man. This is a strange movie because if you were to take just this, as we said, Goonies group of kids trying to stop information from being shared all over the world. It's amazing that that's is a villain plot back in the 90s. You could have a fun little kid adventure PG-13 movie out of it. But the desire to, the necessity to tie this into the Lawnmower Man, the absolute joke of acting that's issued throughout, the ridiculousness of the script, the just non sequiturs from one scene to another and the leaps in logic and just complete disregard for the movie that came before at times make this unfulfilling as a sequel, unfulfilling as a movie. It's bad. And if you did it standalone, you could have some enjoyment here. Probably not as a theatrical release in any way, but you could make this a teen fun movie, but it sure as hell doesn't belong in the Lawnmower Man universe. It doesn't belong in Night Shift. Stephen King better sue somebody because this thing is bad. It's a 4. We've seen a lot worse Stephen King movies. It's a really bad Lawnmower Man movie. It's a ho-hum 90s sci-fi computer hackers teenager movie, but this thing is pretty bad across the board. If you're a completist, as we are being forced to be, I feel really bad for anybody that has to go out and watch this film. But yeah, this is a 4 on 10, and I think I'm being grateful to the cast in this for that.
4 on 10 from Bunch. Goudreau, any more positive?
I think Adam hit basically all my positives. I think the nicest thing I can say about this is it didn't make me want to rip out my eyeballs, cover them in bleach, and set them on fire like some of these Stephen King movies have done and will do for the foreseeable future. But be that as it may, for something that I thought would have been fun trash, or something where they took the name and just did something drastically different, it's both more of the same, but still unsatisfying. And I never thought I would say I missed Jeff Fahey. I think it's the only time we'll ever say that in the history of recording. It's a bad movie, but not in that fun bad. It was just kind of a slog to get through. So I'm going to be nice and give it a 4 because I know there's worse coming. And I know what I'm getting into with The Lawnmower Man 2. But if it wasn't for this podcast, I probably never would have seen this in my life. And I think I might have been more whole if I chose to do that.
Yeah, you know what? Last week's film, while it was an incredibly bad film, I think the three of us had a much better time watching that one than we did this one. This one's a bad film without being fun. Last week's film was bad while being fun. The thing about it is I think the intentions here are just jumbled all over the place. Like I mentioned in the beginning of this podcast, when I was leading up to this, I was thinking, okay, we're going to see Job continue to kill, and we're going to see Peter keep trying to stop him. And that's not what we get here. We just see a huge, more jumbled mess of virtual reality and internet predictions that kind of came true when it comes to the iPhone, but none of it even comes to fruition. There's no reason to watch it. And this movie has zero reason to watch it. As Anna mentioned, we're completionists. We are watching it to complete the series, but I think the intentions are just all over the place. We had franchises in mind. We had a whole bunch of other things that they were planning with this as a franchise after that first film made $150 million. But when this made not even $3 million on a $15 million budget, they sank it. And there's a reason why. There's no good performances here. There is nothing that we can even point to and say, you know what, that's worth watching. It's pretty low on the totem pole. And I was really disappointed, especially after the fun discussion we had last week. So this is a 3, not even a 4 for me. I was just highly disappointed in seeing the Goonies run through the Lawnmower Man virtual reality. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm not a huge fan of the Goonies. I was even lesser fan of this. So 3 out of 10 for me on Lawnmower Man 2, Beyond Cyberspace, Job's War, whatever the hell you want to call it. But here's the thing, boys. For years, Brett Leonard was quiet, and we thought that the Lawnmower Man was done for good. But in the last few years, in 2020, he started making noise that he wanted to make a Lawnmower Man 3. Except there are some rights issues involved, so he's going to be calling it L-Man Reborn instead of Lawnmower Man Reborn. But supposedly, he is working on this, and he does have commitments from previous actors. Boys, we might not be done with the Lawnmower Man yet. Adam, how do you feel about maybe the original director coming back and doing L-Man Reborn?
The title alone just makes my butt pucker. Like, that is... You know, find a way to do a different title, because that is so off-putting, it's kind of ridiculous. I think there's still a Lawnmower Man story to be told. I think between the two of these, you need to get different people to write it. You need to keep it short. You need to decide if it's a horror movie or what it's going to be. But I think the story, you got something there. Well, the story that I know of, because I haven't read it yet. Once we get done with these, I got Night Shift ready to read. But, I mean, I would watch it. Has this Lawnmower Man, you know, and it's that original, but I don't know who would ever, I don't know who he's coming back, who he's got commitments on, you know, but maybe Fahey. Maybe that's the only person he's got returning to the role. If it happens, we're going to cover it, but I'm going to be freaking drag kicking and screaming to the theater for it.
Matt, do you think there's some fun to be had if we have the original director returning and we're going to get L-Man Reborn?
Just no. Especially with that title alone is just, if that is not a harbinger of, you know, choosing the form of the destructor, then I don't know.
Yeah, you know what, as much as it pains me to say, I'm definitely with you two, and we have gone to the point where Stephen King has sued. This isn't a Stephen King property anymore, and we're going to kind of return to this well after Brett Leonard does Man Thing and everything to pretty much sink his own career. He's going to go to the one thing that he did that made a ton of money. I think the guy, in reading interviews with him and listening to him talk, I do think he's a smart guy in a lot of ways. But when it comes to directing, when it comes to filmmaking, I mean, last week's movie was so fucking disjointed, as fun as I had watching it. I don't see any real joy, because I think he's going to take what he did in that film and what he found to be the successful film of his career and just kind of turn it on its head and make that first film just not even fun to watch anymore. So yeah, I'm with you guys. Just kind of leave it born. Let's not go back to Job. If we do get another form of this, I think it's going to be in, like, if Jordan Peele or M. Night Shyamalan or any of these people who want to do these Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone type things gets their way. I think you do it in a short story form. I think in an anthology form. I think you do it, you know, as the way that short story is. Like, you have this God-worshipping character who is eating grass. I think there's some fun to be had with that. And Matt, I think you mentioned in one of the previous Mangler podcasts where Sam Raimi would have been a good choice for that. I think Sam Raimi would be a good choice to do a crazy story like this if you decide to do it. Just stay away from Job. I want to be done with him. So
on that, I'm going to say I love that idea of a Night Shift anthology from a short story, like Twilight Zone type of thing. And somebody like Jordan Peele, not directing them all, but maybe spearheading it, you know, where it's just Night Shift. 2 seasons, 3 seasons, you know, 6 episodes per, just to do them all short story form. I think that's a really good idea.
Okay, now, Matt, we have finished this leg of the Stephen King Night Shift retrospective. It has lived down to every expectation I had coming in. It's been a rough few weeks for everybody. Yes, even for me. Eventually, we're going to be completing it. We only have one story left to go, guys, so that's exciting, right? One story left. Unfortunately, it's going to be consumed within a bunch of movies, which we'll talk about how we're going to cover those when we get to them. But Matt, what do we have coming up next? I believe we have a better set of movies, correct?
Well, that remains to be seen, because one of them we're talking about is kind of a notorious remake. So we're doing Apes Part Deux. So I guess you call it the Planet of the Apes reboots with the 01 Burton film, the three Andy Serkis films, and the new Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is a continuation, question mark?
Yep. All... one of those movies, me and Adam, actually, no, two of them, we saw the remake and we saw Rise. That's it when it comes to that set of films. So that's going to be a really interesting set of films to cover, because Matt's going to be, as he did with the previous set of Apes movies, he's going to be driving those podcasts. And me and Adam are coming in pretty damn cold. Adam, what are you expecting when we get to those films?
You know what? I'm just really curious. I know some people are pretty high on them. And I didn't avoid the last two for any reason other than life getting in the way. I remember enjoying Rise quite a bit. I remember a lot about Tim Burton and Marky Mark's... What? No. Planet of the Apes remake. So that's going to be an interesting discussion there. But I'm really looking forward to it, because I think we got a lot out of the first Apes section way more than we thought. So I can't wait for us to get back into the second half.
Next week's discussion is going to be interesting, because I remember liking the Burton Apes remake. And my interest in coming in to that particular podcast is, now that I've seen the previous ones, am I going to come in with a different mindset and actually see the flaws that everyone else pointed out to me that I was just like, I find it to be enjoyable. I can't help myself. So that's where I'm coming from when it comes to that particular movie. That and Dawn are the two podcasts I'm looking forward to the most with those, because Dawn, I've been told, is one of the best movies, not only of that series, but of any franchise. So yeah, that I can't wait to kind of dive into those. And again, we have the new one coming out too that none of us have seen. So we're getting two that all of us have seen. We're getting a set that Matt has seen, but Adam and I haven't. And we're getting one where all three of us haven't seen it yet. So that, I think, is the most diverse set of opinions I think we've had coming into a retrospective in a long, long time. So, Planet of the Apes, that last leg will start next week. But we have finished this set of Night Shift, boys, so you can breathe a sigh of relief. No King for a bit.
Woo.
But until next week, when we get to Planet of the Apes 2001, you're just a podcast man, Job. Thank you, boys.
No one could have comprehension and attention at that speed. No one.
I did, Dr. Angelo. As a matter of fact, I think my retention is better at higher speed. Normal speed was only putting me to sleep.
That's impossible.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively on Percolated Media.
Very funny. I'm laughing my ass off.
Join us next week for an entirely new review.
I've synergized a tremendous amount of data, and you and I have proven that most functions of the brain are simply lying dormant, waiting to be awakened.
And if you like this review, please head over to percolatedmedia.net or search your podcast streamer of choice, for we have individual reviews such as Knock at the Cabin, The Black Phone, Megan, as well as additional blockbuster franchises like the films of Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, the DC Extended Universe, Stephen King's ongoing collection, and many more.
I realize that nothing we've been doing is new.
And if you'd like to hear the boys talk about the film adaptations of Carrie and The Shining, please head over to www.bingemedia.net and click the Aftertaste tab.
way to deal with these fuckers.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Looks like you made the list, Nardello.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You need to be led, just like everyone else. It's a basic need.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Clean up this, Warwick.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I ain't one of them burning baby flashback fuck-ups you see Bruce Dern playing, so quit your grinning.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
You better watch what you're saying.
I don't think so. I think from now on you better watch what you're saying.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is for review and discussion, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
Now, do you have any idea what a VC rat eats? Try raw American whole mayo, thank you.
And as I told everybody at the beginning of this podcast, $2.4 million on a $15 million budget is going to sink your ship rather fast, faster than the next year's Titanic. Adam?
Yes?
Okay. Adam, how'd you feel going into Lawnmower Man 2? What's weird here, boys, is we've gone from last week's crazy little bit of a slasher film towards the end and a cyber thriller into what I just look at as just a knockoff of Goonies. I thought Goonies while I was watching this. Adam,
Chris, Adam, my notes.
Go ahead, Adam, Matt.
No, Adam, go ahead.
Saying scratch that off my notes because Goonies is exactly what I had written down here. So yeah, I could completely see them just cheapening out by grabbing a spec script.
To which Jonathan responds, "My lap is your lap."
Oh boy!
I thought the
Nickelodeon documentary didn't air until yesterday.
Oh my god! I was watching that yesterday. I wanted to freaking take a shower every 10 minutes.
Oh god. But, I mean, I'm glad that stuff's coming out because it's been tossed under the rug for too long. But as someone who grew up watching all those shows, oh boy, I had to like do a deep soak after watching that.
No kidding, they realized Kevin Spacey was a producer of Nickelodeon.
It basically was that.
Oh, yeah. When you see that chick talk about that potato the way she did, and I was just like, oh my god, it was so disgusting.
For the record, that documentary is still more pleasant than this movie.
We see Job is going in motion, and I used to do this a lot. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me back up here. We see Job doing a motion that I used to do a lot.
Which then I was waiting for a free jack joke to drop around the same time. Remember that one?
Free jack. I mean, holy shit.
I mean, it was the 90s. I was waiting for new jack to show up.
Oh, nice. God damn, free jack. I haven't thought of that movie in years.
Is there anybody else?
Including the people who were in it.
Yeah, that's a terrible movie. And we're seeing the global interface.
And he says, remove the it's just Facebook.
Matt?
I was going to say it's Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
But until next week, when we get to Planet of the Apes 2001, you're just a podcast man, Job. Thank you, boys. All right. Thank you, guys.
Why did they not call it 2001 an Apes Odyssey?
Why do you say quotes like that after we've already stopped our freaking podcast? Damn you. Even after editing this whole thing, I got to put that in as a blooper. Thank you, Adam.
Yep.